Good morning. You've tuned into KRFY's North Idaho News of the Week. I am Jack Peterson here with Chris Bessler, and we are joined this morning by Zach Hagedon of the Sandpoint Reader. And good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have a jam-packed show. It has been a busy week in local news. Just to go down the list of some important stories that have been developing this week. At the county commission, a restraining order was filed against Chairman Steve Bradshaw by Commissioner Asia Williams, resulting in Bradshaw not being allowed on the premises for the time being anyway. So he's been at meetings remotely. Out in West Bonner County's the school district, or at the school board, the recall is coming up next Tuesday. Superintendent or leader, I think he's not officially the superintendent. Is that what we
No, he's hired decided? A superintendent at okay. this point, but he hasn't been certified by the state.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The state board hasn't said he's actually qualified to serve in the position that he was hired in.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he in whatever position he's in right now, the superintendent has been ordered to file for an emergency certificate by the 31st of this month. The special education director, who had just been hired, has resigned before taking their post, which was one of the four items in the letter that the State Board of Education had directed the West Bonner County School District to address. So that, at least, is still something that they have to deal with. Here in Sandpoint, the mayoral race is all but officially underway. We have a candidate who has announced her candidacy, and three seats are opening up on the city council. At North Idaho College, they have hired attorney Colton Boyles as their official attorney of record, I believe, and what else do we have?
The Idaho Club proposal to develop Trestle Creek is going to have a hearing coming up on September 6th. Also, as we have time, we'll talk a little bit about the Panda getting a new roof, and the Equinox Foundation, which contributed to that, also making some huge grants to nonprofit groups around our area. And who knows what else we might wander into today.
I do have a wildfire update as well. I spoke to somebody from the Ridge Creek fire earlier this morning, and we can play that recording in just a little bit, too. Yeah. Well, how shall we begin?
Let's talk county commissioners.
Sure.
We're going to take our whole time with this.
Yeah, I know. All right. There's the show.
And Zach, from the Sandpoint Reader, you wrote about that this week in the Reader that's just out as of yesterday. So give us the lowdown on that. Commissioner Bradshaw had a restraining order filed against him by Commissioner Asia Williams.
Right. And so this story, for being as complicated as it is, doesn't have a whole lot of hard detail because the content of the complaint is confidential. And in fact, the whole fact of the filing probably should have been confidential, but got leaked to a blog that's out there on the internet, and that's how we heard about it. But as far as we can piece together through a thicket of no comments from various county officials, is that in an email on August 21st, the director of the Human Resources Department at the county informed the employees of the county that, quote, at this time, Commissioner Bradshaw is not permitted on county property He is to conduct business electronically and is not to come within 1,000 feet of Commissioner Williams. And from what we can gather, based on a statement that Commissioner Williams issued on, I think it was the 21st, that same day, that Commissioner Bradshaw had apparently made some sort of verbal death threat against her that was reported to the prosecuting attorney and the sheriff, and that Asia was made aware of. And that prompted her to file her protection order, is actually the term that the Human Resources Department makes. And so that is effective until August 30th, when there's going to be a hearing, which is going to be confidential, before Justice Julian, what's his last name? Yeah, Justice Julian. And that's all we really know. Mm-hmm. We don't know how long the protection order is supposed to last. We know it's temporary. We know there's going to be a hearing. We don't know what kind of hearing that is. And we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. I mean, Commissioner Bradshaw was remote at the last meeting. Mm-hmm. So the last meeting he was there in person was August 15th. And that was a kind of an all-time high of tension and acrimony. I mean, these meetings have devolved considerably since January, when the new commission came in and Bradshaw became the chairman, to the point where they don't seem to get a lot of actual business done at the business meeting. It's a lot of wrangling and infighting about the procedures of the meeting. And sort of for broader context, the real conflict between Commissioners Bradshaw and Williams seems to have ramped up after public comment period was taken away, the 3 minutes that were given to the public, or 3 minutes each that were given to the public prior to the commencement of business. And that was taken away at the discretion of the chair because he felt that the attitude and the comportment of the people in attendance was not conducive to actually getting anything done at the meeting. And, you know, you can agree or disagree with that, but the fact is it was getting pretty wild and woolly, and so he canceled that portion of the meeting. And that rankled Commissioner Williams, who has made it her kind of hill, you know, to plant her flag on, that public involvement is critical, that the public should be involved at every step of the process, and that this commission is stifling the will of the people, the voice of the people, and we need to bring every aspect of public involvement back into the process. And Commissioners Ahmet and Chairman Bradshaw are both very resistant to that, pointing out, you know, that Idaho Code stipulates that commission business meetings do not require public comment. They're not a public hearing. They're not a town hall. Mm-hmm. So that is done at the discretion of the chair. And they just keep repeating that, and she keeps repeating her points. And it's gotten to this level where Commissioner Ahmet, anyway, felt that it was necessary to institute Robert's Rules of Order to give some structure to how they were talking about these issues. And that was only a couple of meetings back. So it's a new-ish policy, and Commissioner Williams has opposed it from the beginning.
The Robert's Rules of Order.
The Robert's Rules of Order.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does put her as a disadvantage as a minority member in a commission of only three.
Right.
Right.
And if she...
Because she can't get a second on any motion she makes.
Yeah. Anything that she opposes and tries to bring a motion, you know, to oppose, it can be killed immediately for lack of a second, and discussion can be ended immediately when a commissioner calls for the question. And you see this happen about 10 to 15, maybe 20 times a meeting lately, where Commissioner Williams will bring a slate of motions and almost every one of them will die either through lack of a second or, you know, or discussion is cut off by calling the question. And this is clearly angering her and it's clearly slowing down the meetings. And so that August 15th meeting was just, you know, the second half of it was a 2-hour meeting, and the second half was basically nothing but sparring over these rules, to the point where, you know, Commissioner Williams was you know, speaking and deliberating sort of to herself, and Chairman Bradshaw was trying to move on with a vote, and she just wasn't having it. And finally he got angry and sort of in a very raised voice, you know, says, "I am the chairman. You will respect that." You know, he slaps his hand on a piece of paper on the table and says, "These are the rules." And it got really heated and very confrontational, and she ended up walking out of the meeting before official adjournment, or recess into executive session, I should say. So that was the last time we saw Commissioner Bradshaw in person at a meeting. So at some point between then and, you know, the last Tuesday meeting was when this protection order was filed. Mm-hmm. And again, we don't know the specifics. We don't know, you know, what the content of this so-called verbal threat was. We got confirmation from the sheriff's office that they have been asked to conduct a criminal investigation, quote unquote, and therefore wouldn't comment. We can't seem to get a straight answer on whether this is a criminal or civil matter. I mean, typically protection orders are a civil matter. So that's kind of up in the air. I guess we'll just have to wait till after the 30th to find out what the results of that hearing were.
And that's next Wednesday.
Yeah.
So maybe Commissioner Bradshaw will get back in there or maybe not. Yeah.
And again, I mean, these things are usually highly confidential because typically a protection order or a restraining order is in the context of a domestic violence incident. And, you know, there's a lot of very good reasons why that should remain as confidential as possible. So the fact that this is even out there is a little bit unusual. And, you know, I guess we can sort of thank the right-wing blogosphere in Bonner County. Although I don't think that a lot of folks in the law enforcement and legal community were real happy with the fact that that got out there so quickly.
And there is a big story in the Reader this week. And, of course, the Bees had some stories on it as well. So we will be talking about that again next week.
Maybe.
Something's going to happen.
We'll see what comes out.
We may not hear the results of it, but I guess we won't really know necessarily until the following week whether Commissioner Bradshaw is in the meeting in person.
If he shows up in person, then there'll be some indication that it's been either resolved or it's ongoing in some other area. I mean, one thing I forgot to add, which is very important in this story, is that very late in our deadline, we were actually putting the paper out when we got a statement from the Bonner County Republican Central Committee Chairman, Scott Herndon, who's also our District 1 Senator. His statement was very lengthy, and we didn't have room to print much of it. But the gist of it also was that, you know, he's calling for Chairman Bradshaw to resign from his office. And if not that, then issue a public apology and then resign as chairman. And I guess that's something else we'll have to keep an eye on is if we see Commissioner Bradshaw show up at a meeting in person and issue a public apology and step down as chairman, then I guess we'll know you know who he listened to on that count.
Yeah, the letters to the editor in the Sandpoint Reader are certainly full of comments on that, and especially on Bradshaw more than on Williams or on certainly not on Luke Ahmet, who seems to have not have made an appearance in the letters to the editor this time around. But a couple of letters calling for him to either resign or apologize.
One of those folks who wrote the letter was Dan Rose, who's a high ranking member of the Republican Central Committee.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we should probably push on to another story. That one we could talk about for the entire show. But there's another big story that's had a lot of developments this week, and that's over in West Bonner County School District. Now, they do have the recall election coming up on Tuesday, and the Bee reported that early voting is underway. Apparently, they've got a lot of early votes in. Of course, how do you have early voting on a recall elections are rare in the first place. Jack, you kind of been keeping up on this. We've had this emergency certification for Durst that's pending, and the one of their high ranking officials over there who just started resigned.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us what you've gleaned?
Well, I don't know that I've been keeping up on it as much as as those who live out in West Bonner County. But yeah, Brandon Durst has been ordered by the state board to officially file for his emergency certification as a superintendent. I know you guys talked about this a little bit last week. We don't know, at least I don't think any of us in this room know whether he has made that filing or whether he plans to make that filing, but he has been so ordered by the State Board of Education. He had claimed that because the previous superintendent held an emergency provisional certification that he couldn't hold one, that was what he claimed. And the State Department of Education told him that that was incorrect and he could hold a emergency provisional certification. So they do not, the letter that they mailed to the state board, that is mailed to West Bonner County School District, mailed to them indicated that Durst does not hold the proper superintendent certification and is therefore unqualified to work in Idaho as a superintendent. Codes strongly suggest that the board's decision to allow an uncertified individual to serve as superintendent violates Idaho law, according to the letter. There was then an emergency meeting this past Tuesday to submit a written response. Trustees planned to comply, and Durst was instructed to write that response Wednesday and provide a copy to trustees for review prior to submission to the state board. Additionally, in that original letter from the state board to the Westmoreland County School District, they had brought up 4 points. One of them was, I think, the safety of the school buses. There needed to be an inspection, I think, 60 days before school began of the school buses to make sure that they were safe for students to be riding on. They hadn't, at the time, done that. There was no special education department or SPED department head in place. That problem, at least, is still in effect because they hired somebody who then resigned.
Has just resigned.
Yeah. So the West Bonner County School District is still kind of in a tangle, and it will be interesting to see what happens on Tuesday when the results come in from the recall election. And I don't know, we were just starting to talk about this before we went on the air, but I don't know after that when what happens.
Zaki wrote about that this week in the Reader.
There's some interesting elements to this particular election being a recall. So if for this to succeed, enough voters are going to have to vote to recall the trustees Rutledge and Brown. More people are going to have to vote to recall them than elected them initially. That's the first threshold. So when they were originally elected, the numbers were 244 people voted to put Keith Rutledge in office as a trustee, and 176 voted in favor of putting Susan Brown in as a trustee. Now, that 244 and 176, those numbers need to be higher.
To recall them, against them, in favor of the recall.
So if not enough people vote, you know, over and above the people who voted to put them in office in the first place, then it automatically is going to fail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if more people vote, then you get into a simple majority.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that
those in favor of keeping him versus those in favor of recalling him. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So just because more people are going to vote to recall them potentially than voted to put them in office in the first place isn't enough to recall them. They have to go above and beyond and get a majority of the total number of people who are voting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unusual. That's not exactly the way that it usually works with election. It's kind of hard to explain. But then after that.
Well, they're pretty sure there's a lot of agitation over there. Pretty sure they're going to hit those numbers that they have, the minimum numbers they have.
The minimum numbers, if you're just going by the number of valid signatures that were put on the petition to put Rutledge and Brown on the ballot for a recall. I mean, those numbers alone are higher.
Yeah. So if those people show up to vote,
just the people who signed the petition,
then the question is, are more Durst support or Rutledge supporters going to show up to support them? Yeah.
And the indications, from everyone from, election officials to just the person on the street say that this is probably the most heavily watched and engaged with election in West Bonner history.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could probably expect to see upwards of 2,000 people voting in that election, which is a sizable number of folks from the eligible electorate out there.
Yeah, and I'm both the pro and cons are going to be really pushing to get people out there to the
as
polls.
They have been.
Yeah,
and then what happens after that? I mean, so if the recall is successful, then the canvass date for that election is Thursday, September 7th at 10 a.m. So when the results are canvassed and if the results show that those two trustees have been recalled, then it's up to the remaining trustees to vote and appoint two new folks. Mm-hmm. And then those two new folks would serve out the remainder of those terms, and then the next election cycle would come back as normal.
Mm-hmm. Which would likely be this November 7th.
Yeah.
Just the regular – put them on the regular elections calendar.
I'm not exactly sure how long the terms were remaining for Rutledge and Brown.
Oh, you mean, oh, so it would be, it would not be necessarily this November 7th. They would be at the end of their
They would serve out whatever term. Remaining time is in that office's term.
Okay. And they were recently elected, so it probably isn't this November.
Yeah.
It's probably at least a two-year term, if not a four-year term.
It was my understanding that when there was an appointment, that the next election, they have to be, these seats have to be voted on. But I'm not sure about that. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Well, yeah, it'll all come out in the wash next Wednesday.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting day, actually. That's coming up on August 29th. That's just next Tuesday that the official voting occurs.
Right. When next we are on the air, next Friday, we'll know the results of that election.
Meanwhile, school starts in about a week and a half, right?
On September 5th.
Yeah.
Yep. So we should probably jump to, we have a report on the fire, and we're going to be running out of time here. This is, 4 or 5 minutes catching us up on specifically the Ridge Creek fire. Is that right,
Jack? That's right. This was the one burning down north of Hayden Lake.
And then we'll come back. We'll have a few other stories to briefly talk about.
All right.
This is Mary Fritz. I'm a public information officer with the Southern Gold team.
And what is going on at the Ridge Creek Fire right now? We had some rain last week, and that's the last time we kind of touched base with anybody at the Ridge Creek Fire. That was before the rain and actually during that heavy smoke. The weather's changed considerably since then. How has that affected the firefighting operations?
Well, the rain has helped us a lot. It has settled down the large flames, and we are in a smoldering, creeping type of condition right now due to the rain. And this afternoon, we're expecting and hoping to get a little bit more rain, but we do have drying that's going to happen over the next 3 days. So we still have a lot out there. That over the course of the next few weeks is available to burn. That said, we have 25% containment. We're at 4,347 acres, and we have a fair amount of line that is in around the western, southwestern perimeter and the southeastern perimeter. That is where we have our containment, and we do have lines around the majority of it. We're just not ready to call it completely contained. We have work to do along those lines to strengthen them, to widen them. We have a series of hand crews out there. We also have machinery out there that we're using to increase the lines and improve those lines.
I spoke to somebody who speculated that this fire would basically be burning until in one form or another, basically until the snow falls. Is that a more or less accurate assessment, do you think, or do you hope to have it out sooner than that?
Well, having worked fires in this area for a real long time and knowing that we can still have heat into mid-September even, and sometimes end of September, it really is going to be weather dependent. It's going to depend upon how much weather we get. Are we going to have a season-ending event? And by that, I mean lots of rain or early snow. We have hot pockets in the interior that still are burning and or susceptible to burning. And so it will be weather-dependent as to how soon we can get this out. Oftentimes, they are season-ending events when we get late in the season like this.
Yeah. So the prognosis is pretty good. Things seems to be going to plan with the firefighting operation there, and barring any extreme weather events in a negative context, you feel like this fire is coming under control in the way that's you'd expect.
Well, control is really when we feel absolutely secure about it, and we're just not there yet. We're working on getting containment around the perimeter where we feel like we've got something that is not going to pop over the fire line, not get over over the edge. So we're first going to be seeking containment, and then control most likely will come with some type of a season-ending event when all the smokes are out and we feel, you know, it's secure.
Yeah. Well, okay.
But one thing about this fire is, we do get prevailing southwest and southwesterly winds, which is when we get those just generally in this part of Idaho, it's pushing it more into forested areas and not so much back to where there could be communities at risk. And the other thing that we have going on is anywhere up there in the northeast section along the Bunko area, we've been doing a tremendous amount of structure protection out there, assessing homes and where needed and if needed, setting up sprinklers and hoses and available water. So we have an entire group that is dedicated to specifically working on that.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for all that information, Mary. And unless you can think of anything else you want our listenership to know about, I'm going to let you get back to your morning's activities.
Well, listenership, please still be very careful with fire out there. We have restrictions on campfires, and know before you go to get out and play. Check with your local forest, understand what any restrictions might be there. Very important. And also to begin reducing fuels around your home if you live in an area where it's heavily forested. That's very, very important to be doing.
That's the end of that. We're live back here in the studio. It's North Idaho News of the Week. I'm Jack Peterson here with Chris Bessler and Zach Hagedon, just wrapping up, tidying up the weekend news before we continue with Otto's Eclectic Mix today. What was our next item on the agenda? The Sandpoint City.
So, well, we had the first candidate who kind of officially announced for the mayoral seat. That's Kate McAllister. She had a campaign launch party Wednesday to announce she's running for mayor. The election is November 7th, but the period to file for office starts this coming Monday, August 28th, and it goes for 2 weeks, closes September 8th. So we're going to start seeing some candidates that get official and file for these seats, along with the open mayor seat, because our incumbent mayor, Shelby Ronstadt, has said he's not running for re-election. There are three council seats. Then they're the ones helped by Kate McAllister. She'll be vacating hers to run for mayor. And then Andy Grote and Deb Rule are also up for election. Zach, do you know if Andy and Deb intend to file for re-election?
I haven't heard. Yeah. I'm waiting to see if they trickle in, you know, after the filing deadline's over. Mm-hmm. We haven't heard anything about whether or not they're going to stay on.
So that closes September 8th, and a lot of candidates wait till the very last day to file.
Right.
So we won't really know who's running for city seats until then. Other news, the Idaho Club's proposal to develop to build a development at Trestle Creek has a hearing coming up September 6th. There was a story in the Sandpoint Reader this week about that. It'll be held from 5 to 10 p.m. in the Sandpoint High School Auditorium. The Idaho Club's proposal is, this is actually a new design that they're putting forth. A previous one was not approved. It is calling for the construction of 5 single-family luxury estates and 105 fixed pier docks and a marina right there at Trestle Creek, which is basically pretty undeveloped right now. Trestle Creek is an important bull trout spawning stream. It's also a place where you can go and see kokanee spawning. And I don't know if you guys have ever done that.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you have, Zach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. You go right by the bridge, and it probably starts in about a month, I think.
Right.
The bright red kokanee that are going up Trestle Creek to spawn, you'll be able to see them right there in the water. It's pretty cool. I took my kid there. It's a fun thing to go do for families, and it's right by the highway. Anyways, Trestle Creek is an important wildlife area, so that is going to be contentious, I'm sure. I believe the Idaho Conservation Leagues and some other organizations have already, you know, mounted some opposition to this proposal. That hearing is September 6th. What else do we want to squeeze in here, guys?
Panda Theater's got a new roof.
Yeah.
That is something that's been I mean, if you pay attention to anything that's going on at the Panada, I feel like the roof is mentioned and has been for years. Yeah. And it has now officially, there is a new roof that was announced on August 22nd. Special thanks to Heather Upton of the Sandpoint Arts Commission, Arts, Culture, and Historical Preservation Commission, Sandpoint Grants, Contracts, and Procurement Manager Cheryl Hughes, Chris Bessler, CEO and publisher of Keoki Media and Marketing, Jerry Miller with Idaho Department of Commerce, and Cody Pearson with Fisher Roofing, were the special thanks issued by the Panada Board of Directors.
Well, I would say Chris Bessler was the least due that special thanks, but I'm on the Century Fund Committee that's helping to organize and raise money for a whole set of restoration needs that our theater has as we're in the run-up to its 100th anniversary in 2027. Mm-hmm. I do want to mention the Equinox Foundation also supported that, and another story this week that you can read about in the Sandpoint Reader is that the Equinox Foundation with the Anovia Foundation doing the distribution awarded $374,000 in grants to 37 different nonprofit organizations in Bonner and Boundary counties. It is just amazing what this local foundation is doing to support a whole range of needs in our community. Mm-hmm. Big shout out to the Equinox Foundation for that. And you can read more about all the different groups that received money through this very generous grant award from the Equinox Foundation if you check out the Sandpoint Reader this week. Anything else we want to mention before we already 3 minutes past our our stated goal to go 30 minutes.
Blew right through it.
Happens every time. Yeah. Without fail. Zach, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Where can people read more of your work?
Sandpointreader.com or any of our 150 plus distribution locations throughout Sandpoint and surrounds.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll see that there. Hey, I'll throw out one more little thing here. We made international news this week when the Guardian wrote a story about the fact that Sandpoint, Idaho's maternity ward is closed down. The Guardian is published out of the UK. I don't know if you saw that, Zach.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. And you can check that out if you go to theguardian.com and see. It's not a news story, but it's interesting that, it's been of national and international, now international, you could say, interest. Yeah.
Well, we're going to continue with our daily regular programming. Stay tuned for Otto's Eclectic Mix, starting up right now with something by the Wailers, I think, and then Bird Note coming up at 9 o'clock, Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long. Hey, on Tuesday, tune in the evening. We'll be covering the results of that West Bonner County School District election because those should come in pretty early, ordinarily, when it's a small election like that, the results come through pretty quick. So you can hear them here on 88.5 KRFY. That's it for North Idaho News of the Week. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.